We are all emotional beings. At the end of the day, you want your product to spark joy. Not just beauty to work, but beauty to actually be delightful and easy to use, I guess.
And now, creator of the wildly popular open source component library Chakra, and who also recently released the foundational web UI libraries Zag and Panda. Welcome to the React Show, Shagun Adebayo.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Thomas. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, of course. Super excited. Let's jump right into it. So first, I just wanted to say I've noticed over the years you put like a little flag next to your name on sites, and I've noticed it changes. Do you move around fairly frequently? Is that what's going on, or is it like traveling? I'm just kind of curious.
Oh yeah, well, to be honest, I would say that like I move around, but it's not a habit. I would say it's a pretty new habit. I mean, I haven't like had this before. So previously, I used to stay in Nigeria, and then I relocated to Dubai, the UAE, and then shortly after I moved to the UK. So I think it's largely, I wouldn't say I move around a lot. It's just like more like the decisions I make from time to time. I don't really enjoy traveling, to be honest. It's just more like, I mean, I make decisions at different points in time. That's why those things change, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's cool. I was like, it's really cool to see that sort of like part of your character coming through on things. Where are you coming from these days?
I mean, I'm currently based in the UK. I'm in Manchester right now, and it's pretty good weather over here, at least. Yeah.
Oh, okay, awesome. I haven't been there, but I hear great things. I'm hanging out in the Bay Area in San Francisco area, so yeah. Well, nice. We're a little ways away, but I'm glad we can make it work.
Totally.
The modern marvels of technology, right? I mean, that's what we do, right? We make software, so.
Of course.
Awesome. So just briefly, you know, for anyone that isn't familiar, could you just like talk about maybe what makes Chakra UI unique among component libraries?
I mean, I've got like old definition of Chakra UI and I've got new definition. So I'll try and maybe go through them. I mean, the classic way I talk about Chakra UI pretty much is like Chakra UI gives you the building blocks you need to build your React applications super fast. Right, so Chakra UI is all about building blocks, it's about accessibility, it's about developer experience, and sort of merging all of that into a single component library that gives you all the pieces you need. All right, so prior to that, you've had to deal with different libraries where you fight with the styles, or you've got to use some importance, you like literally try to make it your own. But Chakra UI is pretty much a library that, I mean, gives you the accessible foundation to work with, and then allows you pretty much take control of the styling, so you pretty much can do anything you want with the components. I think this is one of the key pieces most people love about Chakra UI.
Yeah, totally. I would agree. I've actually been using Chakra since I forget the exact version, but it was long before version one.
Yeah. And,
yeah, I just remember being super excited at like the quality of the documentation and the overall like what I characterize as the quality of the like interface and the design. Like it just seems very like consistent and, you know, cohesive. So I've always been very happy about that. So yeah, thank you for releasing Chakra and bringing that to all of us.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm curious next. So you've released some new things, right? So we have Zag and Panda, and I know Arc is in there as well, which is based on Zag. I'm just, yeah, curious, how did you go from Chakra to these other things?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's actually quite, I mean, one of the things I try to do a lot is pretty much reflect, sort of do a retrospective on like everything and all the successes I've had so far, and then figure out like, how can I make this even better? So I think it's largely from this experience and this thought process that it goes from like, I mean, one step back, I think, would be like We've got like Chakra UI, which is largely a React component library. Now, at some point, I had my friend Jonathan reached out to me and say, I'd love to make a Vue version of this. And I go like, oh, for sure, I'll give it a try. Just do it, let's see. And he actually went ahead to make a Vue version of Chakra UI. And then very quickly, I think one of the things we noticed is like, we're literally copying like mirroring the same logic between frameworks. Of course, you have to use the framework-specific semantics, which is a different thing of its own, but they're not so different at the end of the day, right? But then the rate at which you're fixing bugs and adding features to these two different languages, I think it became a burden to sync back and forth between them. It became like pretty obvious that, no, this is not the way to go. I don't have time. I don't have the bandwidth to like go through all of this. We need a fresh perspective to this. I mean, I cannot commit time to add one more framework besides React and Vue. So that made us feel like breakpoint, pretty much. Like, if we take any more framework into this mix, we're all going to burn out and we'll not have the energy to take it further beyond this. So it pretty much, that was the real defining moment for us. We're just like, okay, we need to go back to the drawing board, think about this again, and just be like, if we wanted to do Chakra UI again from scratch, pretty much, like, how would we do it differently? And that is where the exploration started. And that, of course, I mean, made us stumble on the idea of state machines. And we thought that, yeah, state machines could actually be the key thing there. So we're so excited about it. And we took a course on Frontend Masters by David Khurshid. I think I finished that course in 2 days with all the exercises. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is so cool. Let me try to make one component. So I made the accordion component. I made the menu component. And it felt real. It felt real to me. Like, okay, that means I can actually model any component with a state machine. And a state machine is effectively just JavaScript. So I think I got too excited. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this to the extreme. And taking it to the extreme was what brought about Zach.js, which is pretty much the foundation of like everything we see today.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so actually, I've used state machines for UI components like that before. I never took it as far as you into making a component library, but like, or at least I assume that's sort of the direction we're going, right? When I saw that, I was like, yes, exactly. That makes sense. Is that kind of like the feeling you got when you were like sort of looking into it and you came across state machines and you're like, oh yeah, this would fit perfect? Or like, how did that happen?
I think it came from just like going through the exercise of like learning state machines. I think, to be honest, I have to be honest that the learning curve is quite a lot. It's quite steep. You have to actually go through like a whole mental model shift to be able to think in state machines. But I think once I figured out one or at most two examples, like trying to mirror the APIs in Chakra UI with a state machine was quite a challenge. And then I think once I was able to get that done to the point where I copied over the test from Chakra UI and I put it in the state machine and the test you passes, I'm like, okay, now I'm there. I feel really excited about this. And let's go for the rest of the components, I guess. Yeah.
All right, so now that we've touched on Zag, would you mind giving a quick actual definition of what Zag is for people that probably aren't familiar, I assume?
For sure. So Zag.js is pretty much a collection of headless components that are largely powered by state machines. So the real technical advantage of this approach is the fact that these machines can run in any JavaScript framework, pretty much. So we currently have Zag.js working in React, Vue, and Solid.js. We're currently exploring Quick and Svelte as well, just to show that this idea is something that is pretty much universal. It's not tied to a specific framework. And I think one of the coolest things about all the machines we have, they're pretty much like, you do them once and you reuse them anywhere, which is what I love about state machines. And the debugging process, the testing process is way, way simpler compared to having to write use effects, use reducer, and all the things in React, and having to port that over to multiple frameworks. So in a nutshell, Zag.js is all of the headless components backed by a state machine.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. So the sort of process, it sounds like, is you had Chakra, then you had, it sounds like a friend that was like, hey, I want to make this work in Vue. And so you kind of went down that route and then you're like, wow, this is really ridiculous. How can we make this work better, right? And so then you're like looking at it and it was that sort of looking at it being like, okay, what parts are sort of shared? And like, I'm just kind of curious on how you identified that this sort of what I would characterize as like the logic behind the components as the place to sort of start attacking first, I guess. Does that sound right?
Yeah, sure. That sounds right, actually. So I think like one of the things that we probably, I mean, I can touch on is the fact that if you take like any component, for example, so let's even just break this down to a simple to-do list application. So you've got a to-do list application in React. So you have a form input, you type in some text, you click submit, you add a new to-do. Now, a lot of what I just described has nothing to do with React. It's pretty much just describing the feature of that to-do list application. And when it comes to like updating the list or the array of to-dos, that is just also JavaScript. I mean, none of that has to do with React. Of course, you have to bring in React when you have to like sync it up with the UI, which is like, I mean, update the state and then map through the state to render the list of to-dos. Now, that is the framework specific bit, but as far as like gathering or doing a filter or doing a map or a push or a concat, all of those things are standard JavaScript logic. So you can imagine that if we then extrapolate that to like an accordion component, it's pretty much the same thing. You're focusing on an item, you're blurring on an item, you're handling keyboard navigation. The logic of managing keyboard navigation, events are still events. They may be synthetic events, they may be DOM events. I mean, they are still events. You've got current target, they've got all the pretty much the same attributes across all the frameworks. So the idea was just like, can I just like take this bit of code that is shared, that is just JavaScript and it's agnostic to any framework, and just like move those into a machine and actually handle them there. And that's where I think the light bulb came on. I'm like, oh, we're actually able to do that. Oh, that's cool. Then let's keep going.
Yeah, totally. So it sounds like you didn't necessarily start with, you had the React version of Chakra and you weren't like, okay, I'm going to engineer some solution that lets me build this for other frameworks. Instead, you took the approach of let's start building it for other frameworks and then kind of look at what the commonality is. Is that a sort of summary of how you approached it?
Yeah, because we actually had like pretty practical examples. So it wasn't largely just like trying to invent something new. We've got the React code base, we've got the Vue code base. I think it was largely a matter of like, look at this accordion in React and look at this accordion in Vue and just figure out what is common between them. And a lot of the JavaScript there were pretty common. I dare to say maybe 60% of the JavaScript there is like pretty much the same. Everything else is just refs and use state and computed and use effects. Like you just like have to like work between these two differences. But at the end of the day, we're able to actually like extract a lot of the common code between these two frameworks. So I think it started from React and Vue, and then slowly we got into Solid.js, which looked pretty similar to React in some way, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this actually reminds me of, you had said previously that when you created the initial version of Chakra, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you had said you sort of extracted that from another real world project that you had been working on. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, so I started building like a resume builder or a resume SaaS product where you could go on there to create your resume and design your resume. So I built that product as a way to actually learn and get like super familiar with building like complex React applications, full stack, like from the front end to the back end. So I tend to sort of like create these like hard challenges for myself to tend to, just so I can actually like expand my skill set. All right. So I did that. I actually made that product with a friend of mine. And we launched the product. And then out of that product, we actually created a small mini design system. At the time it was called The product was called Career Lift. So we called the little component library Career Lift Chakra, from there, then I just like carved out the name, like the difference between those two is Chakra. So let's just call it Eastern Chakra and move on.
yeah, totally. That makes a lot of sense. For long-time listeners of this show, they'll know that's an approach I often recommend because, like, I guess what I don't know if you've seen this as well, but I've seen a lot of people that will sort of decide that they want something and they'll just try to create it directly. So they might be like, oh, I wish there was a better component library, and they just sort of try to make it out of thin air. And I've often said that's really hard to sort of get it right and get things to fit. It's a lot easier to just build something and then extract it out. And it kind of seems like that's the approach you've taken with a lot of things. I'd like to ask then, is that also the approach that you've taken with another new library you created, which is Panda? So did you use the similar approach for that?
Not exactly. I would say that like I'm using a similar approach for ZackJS and Arc, which is I'm currently building a SaaS application to help enterprise teams manage design tokens and create workflows behind these tokens, right? So I'm trying to sort of like, again, create that scenario where it's like, okay, I need to put everything I've made so far to a test. And then I'm taking like all of the new stuff and throwing it into this product. So it's been like, okay, we need to have like a real tangible working scenario where you can say all of these products built with Panda and ZackJS. So you can actually feel confident enough to use this product or to use the component library in your products at least. So yeah, I'm currently doing that with ZackJS and Arc. For Panda, I think Panda pretty much came out of the need of like, out of sort of like the industry shift, I guess. That's where like Panda came from, right? And a large portion of that has been like due to the technical constraints around the React Server components, even though like it's not super mainstream just yet. But we're starting to see like the huge benefits behind this idea, right? So one of the key constraints that brings is the fact that like you cannot use runtime CSS and JS anymore. And Chakra UI is currently built with Emotion, which of course requires runtime CSS and JS. So we pretty much had to like figure out like how do we get, I would say like sort of like we tried to say like not get out of this scenario, but how do we work around this problem? But then we tried several months. It seemed to be like there's no way to work around it. You just have to get out, pretty much. So we had to think about like how to solve that problem and give the same development experience like Chakra UI and even better, make it such that it can work in React Server components. So I would say that's pretty much the challenge we had that made us make Panda.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm still wondering though. So like when you actually went to create Panda, I've noticed a lot of similarities between Panda and Chakra. And I know there's, I think, differences as well. But when you went to create it, was it, maybe you didn't necessarily extract the code from something else, but I am wondering if in some sense you extracted some of the ideas and interfaces and maybe iterated on them. But is that correct? Is that a correct?
Yeah, that's correct. 100% correct, actually. So it started off with pretty much like if I wanted to redesign the starting API for Chakra UI, what would it look like? Again, just the same way I did with ZackJS and the rest is sort of like if I wanted to try again, but with much more informed knowledge and with much better experience that I've had over the years, what would that look like? So Panda is pretty much like what I think it would look like. We pretty much extracted a lot of APIs. We did not extract any code from Chakra specifically because somehow, mentally speaking, I like to sort of like start from real scratch, not like try to take some code and mesh them together because you try to bring in some old mess into the new. So I just like try to sort of define the API surface for Panda first and then just try to make it look pretty much like Check for UI, but better.
Well, now that we've talked about Panda a little bit, would you mind giving people a quick overview of what it actually is, what you're trying to accomplish with it?
Yeah, so I mean, Panda, I would say, like, is the next generation CSS and JS library that works with React Server components, and it's pretty much ideal in an environment where you don't want any, you don't want runtime JavaScript. You want all your CSS to be pre-generated ahead of time, and you still want to get the benefits of Chakra UI or existing libraries like Emotion, where you can create style objects which are strongly typed and they work in any environment. So the really good benefit of Panda is it doesn't require any setup to make it work on the server side. It just works pretty much. And it has so much unique ideas, like design tokens, like recipes, where you can actually craft your components' recipes and how you want them to look, and much more interesting ideas if you explore the docs. But yeah, Panda is pretty much that future CSS and JS library that works in React Server components and even just client-side components as well. It's not just for server environments, I guess.
Yeah, I can actually say so. Part of trying to figure out the current React and web landscape to communicate it to the listeners of the podcast, but also just out of my own curiosity, I've been messing around with React Server components and I've created projects with them. And it's been the first time I didn't use Chakra or something like that in a long time. And yeah, because it just was like, well, I can't really. I mean, you can. It's just you kind of don't get a lot of the benefits of React Server components, right? And actually, the past like couple weeks, I've been building a new project using Panda and actually Zag for some things, and it's been a lot of fun. I would say I could tell it's still in active development, but it's been really cool to see the sort of iterations and like the design token system and how that all sort of fits together. So yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, and I can say that the stuff that I did. So I used Tailwind when I couldn't use Chakra, and I like Panda. <We'll say that>. So, yeah. I'm sort of like that sort of, you know, makes me wonder, like, the whole React Server components thing. Did that kind of take you by surprise in a sense of how that impacted a lot of things, or was it sort of like you could see this coming and you were sort of working on, okay, we're gonna have to make some changes?
No, I think I'll say like I was pretty privileged to sort of like, I mean, know about this ahead of time, because at the time when it was still pretty much in the early stages, I used to work at Vercel, and it was actually like a pretty common topic. So I think the only thing I struggled to wrap my head around is like how how CSS and JS fits into this new vision. But I think like I couldn't really get a strong, solid answer to that. So I think like during that stage was when I felt like there's a very good chance that CSS and JS, at least runtime CSS and JS, isn't really like considered in this new journey that we're getting into. And I think that's just largely by design because of the key features and the key, like, I mean, to add stuff, you have to remove stuff at the end of the day, right? So it's like, at the end of the day, it felt like, I mean, the runtime CSS and JS libraries are probably going to take a hit with this new innovation that's coming on. I think that once it takes flight, I don't consider runtime CSS and JS existent anymore. I would say I probably give it the next year or two. We should probably start to see, like, I mean, except if it's like super, if there's a way to work around it. I think today there is, but it's still not like super elegant just yet. A lot of the libraries would have to make a radical turn to actually like support server components. And it did take some folks by surprise, but for me, I was sort of like privy to lots of information about this ahead of time. So that maybe got me into the mind space of like, okay, now you have to think about this, about the worst case scenario here, and try to figure out how to get out of it at least.
Yeah, that's cool. You're able to have that sort of advanced notice. So I imagine you're sort of running some of this in the back of your head for a while, like, okay, what are we going to do type of thing. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I kind of wanted to switch topics slightly. So one thing I've always noticed and appreciated about your work is that the graphic design side of things seems very cohesive good. It looks good, right?
Thank you.
And I know your background is more from that sort of the world, right? You didn't necessarily start as a software engineer and then you picked up a book, how do I design good looking interfaces, right? Is that, I don't know. Could you, I guess, maybe just briefly talk a bit about your background as it relates to that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd say that like a large portion of my early career started off like designing posters and banners and like business cards and stuff like that. So I did that for quite a while. So like identity design, logo design, brand assets, like I did pretty much all of that for a long time. And then very shortly I switched over to like Photoshop. I think then Photoshop was really huge. So it's like designing interfaces, designing banner, much bigger banners, corporate websites from within Photoshop. And then very, very quickly, I got a MacBook. And then I switched over to Sketch, which Sketch was like the top rating tool to design that those years. Right, so I got into Sketch, started design, did large product design, mobile applications. I think a lot of things I did were related to marketing, though. We're just like, helping people design their landing pages, their course pages, and like all of the key things to like different businesses and different coaches. I worked with them for a number of years, and I freelanced there on Upwork, on TopTal for quite a while. That was where I pretty much like spent most of my design years. And of course, shortly after that, I got nudged by a client to just like attempt to take a design and put it in WordPress. And I'm like, okay.
Uh-huh. Totally.
I'm not sure I can do this, but anyways, let's try. Let's give it a shot. And I actually did that and it came out pretty okay. Not so great, but pretty okay, to be honest. And I think like from there on, I started to realize that to get pretty good at things like WordPress, you have to know HTML and CSS and be able to write plugins. And that was where the curiosity started. It's like, okay, I don't like how it looks. It's good, but not great, but I want to make it great. So let me learn some HTML and CSS. And I think the journey pretty much started off from there.
Okay, that's an awesome story. Like, that's totally like, yeah, I started doing this and people were like, well, I really like this. And you're like, okay, let me figure it out.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like, pretty much.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I'm wondering then, like, how, like, have you ever like thought about how that influences the way that you now do software engineering? And like, I think specifically it makes me wonder if you approach creating and solving problems maybe a little bit different than somebody that has a more traditional software engineering background. And the reason, and like more specifically what I'm wondering is, let's say you go to create a new thing, whatever it happens to be in software. Do you start by figuring out how you want it to look essentially? Is that kind of the approach you'll take? So you're like, oh, I want this new interface, you sketch it out in something, or and then maybe you go in and figure out the logic. I'm just sort of curious if, and maybe this is not the case, I'm just sort of trying to push to see if there's like a way this like changes the way you approach things.
I would say that like my mindset has sort of grown and matured over the years. I would say maybe if this were like 3 years ago, I would probably go like, I'll definitely like try to sketch out the idea and then try to like design a little wireframe in Figma, or back in the days I used to use Balsamic to sort of create wireframes. So I just like use some Balsamic stuff, and then I pretty much start to like, flesh it out in Sketch or in Figma, any tool is available to me, and then we take it from there. But now it's like, after going through like several rounds of like designing APIs and solving very hard problems, I mean, I'm starting to sort of appreciate the power of like just, I mean, imagining what the solution could be before like getting your hands into it. So I always tend to say like you start something when it's finished in your head. Right. So it's more like before I get my hands into code, I like just try to visualize what Panda, this new Panda library could look like. And when anyone tries to install this new Panda library, what do I want it to feel like? What do I want it to look like? And just like try to imagine myself through going through the motion of all of these different parts. I mean, I could do that in a whole go or just like chunk it up into different features and try to sort of imagine those things one by one. When I actually have that fully formed, in my mind, even if I don't know how it's going to happen in terms of the logic, I know what I want at least. So I pretty much want to start with the end goal in mind. So I'm just going to take that end goal and try to actually like write out like actual test cases for them. And then work my way backwards by trying to figure out the code. Before I even get to the UI, I need to get it functional, right? So when it's functional, then I have to figure out what is the best way to present this functional application in a way that actually makes sense and is easy to understand. What information do I need to show? What information do I need to hide? What information do I need to progressively disclose to the user? So those kind of like, I mean, tiny questions that you pretty much want to ask yourself. I was like, I have to go through all those different rounds. But then it has to be functional first. You have to imagine the end goal. It has to be functional. Then it has to look good. I mean, I think once you get through all these key motions, then you can get pretty engineering and try to sort of make it super fast or make it much like renders and stuff like that here, pretty much.
Yeah, so it sounds like your sort of general approach is starting with imagining the sort of high level way that it would function, and then you might go into doing some of the engineering to make it function, and then you're also thinking about how the users are going to see it and interact with it. Which brings me to my next question, something I have seen you mention a lot, but I haven't really found you talking about it much. Maybe I just missed it, but you've talked about empathy a lot. And to me, it kind of sounds like that's what you're talking about, is like having empathy for the user of your software and trying to imagine how it's going to impact them and what they're going to want to experience. I don't know if that's what you've meant by it, but I'm curious if you could talk more about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that like when it comes to the topic of empathy, it's a pretty big one for me because I say like besides just like product design or making stuff, it's pretty much more like a life principle or idea, which is pretty much imagine other people being in a specific scenario or situation and sort of like feeling their feeling, pretty much like trying to actually feel what they feel, even though technically speaking it could be impossible, but by just imagining that you could potentially be able to reason about with them. So it's the same conversations here with like building things, right? Building things in my mind at the end of the day is an act of generosity. It is like you trying to sort of imagine people go through a problem and trying to figure out like, how do I solve this problem? How do I turn the pain to joy at the end of the day? And it's like, okay, I know they're currently going through some pain. Let me try to figure out what the pain is, first of all. And then when I do that, let me try to imagine what can I make that could change that emotion? Because at the end of the day, we are all emotional beings, right? And as we do and interact with our devices, or the software, the web, there are just feelings that come off and on as we go through these motions. So at the end of the day, you want your product to spark joy and delight. So thinking through is actually quite a lot of work, and being able to like, not just beauty to work, but beauty to actually be delightful and easy to use, I guess.
Yeah, that is, I'll be honest, I think that's one of the most beautiful explanations of how to create good software I've ever heard. I feel like most of the conversations are like around, I don't know, more of like the details, like, oh, how do we make this a good user experience without taking that step back and learning to empathize with the people using the software, because that's really what's ultimately going to create a good user experience, right? Like if you understand how people do that, but it's not something I feel like people really talk about all that much. I'm really curious, where does that come from for you? Is this empathy, is that something that you just grew up with thinking about a lot, or like, you know, can you talk more about where that came from and why you focus on that?
I definitely give like a lot of these to like, should I just say like my background and my family in general, largely because lot of like the way, I mean, a lot of the way we act today is also like mostly formed by how we grew up and the experiences we had growing up. Right. So for me, it's largely just like, I mean, coming from where I come from, we place a lot of emphasis on like how you treat people and how you're like, how you should be kind and polite to people, regardless of their status or their background. So it's sort of like, I would say like that pretty much like forged something in my heart, at least. Right. And then to add to that, it's pretty much like my design background as well. Right. So I mean, design has a lot to do with like trying to take an idea and trying to make it meaningful for other people, or try to present in a way that's meaningful and useful. And I think that like, when it comes to design, I think one missing piece is not just empathy for like the end user or the end customer, but actually empathy for even your colleagues and people you work with. There's always this war between design and developers, where it's like, I created this really nice UI, but it's so unusable, or developer, it's going to take like so much development time because it's so nice, but it just wastes money because everyone tries to implement this design and it just doesn't work the way you want it to. I think we've gone through so many rounds of these kind of things, and like we just say, hey, developers are lazy, or developers don't want to put in the work and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's like we need to sort of like practice what we preach, even in design, which is like trying to figure out not just what is possible for the end user, but what is possible from a business standpoint for your colleagues to be able to implement in a way that is easy. I mean, easy for the user. Of course, it doesn't have to be easy for the developers, but it should be like functional, and it shouldn't take too long to make, I guess.
That makes a lot of sense. I do have to say, that sort of upbringing you talked about, you know, with the focus on, you know, sort of caring and understanding other people. I would love to import some of that into the world I grew up in. I feel like that's a lot different. So that's really cool. I really admire that. Awesome. So yeah, I think that really makes absolute sense. And the way that you said it makes a lot of sense too, because I've often thought of it as like being like, oh, trying to get in the mind of users and trying to understand how they're going to do it. But I think you took this to a whole nother level of not just like trying to understand how they're going to interact with the software, but even understanding their emotions and how the delight, as you said, it's going to bring up in people. And so that's really cool. I think if we're going to bring this back to your latest projects, like probably maybe Panda's the best example of this. Are there any specific things when it comes to Panda where you're like excited, like, wow, I feel like this is really gonna make people happy?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that I think at some point, I can't remember the month specifically, but we had like a pretty much a very consistent backlash at like React Server Components and so many open source libraries get into like wars and conversations around like when will this library support React Server Components and when will that library support React Server Components. And it literally pretty much became like a talk of the town within communities. And it's just like, I mean, I guess in my mind, like I was pretty much like something moves within me. It's like, okay, I wish I could find a solution to this and somewhat like be able to sort of like get some solution that works for at least majority of people, if not all. And that was pretty much like, that's one of the key reasons why. And of course, besides that, I also get tons and tons of messages for Chakra UI as well. When are you going to support next year's 13 app directory? several components specifically. I'm like, oh boy, this is quite a lot. I guess like, I mean, I at some point I then had to sort of like leave that environment and just like, I mean, in my mind, I cannot think and listen at the same time. I mean, when I want to sort of like think, I just want to like shut off all the noise. So at some point I did, I did have to leave most social networks and just like be like, okay, I've heard enough of the problems. Now it's time to actually like think up a solution for this. And I think that that was pretty much like where Panda pretty much started to form in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I, sort of pushing on it though, like, is there any part of, say, the API or what you've created in Panda where you're excited about, like imagining, oh, somebody's going to see this and see what they can do with this part of it and just being like, wow, that's so cool, I love it type of thing?
The fact that it can work in the React Server component context is enough to get the excitement.
Yeah, you think that's enough where people are just going to be like, wow, this is so cool. It's like all compiled ahead of time. It just works. Yeah,
for sure. And I think that like one of the things that like, I mean, was said quite a lot by like the, should I say the opposing communities, is largely the fact that, hey, CSS and JS should be dead by now, or CSS and JS should not exist anymore. Because I think like in most people's minds, the assumption is CSS and JS is equal to runtime CSS and JS.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, in the past, we've seen examples of libraries that try to keep CSS and JS, but made it like build time. Libraries like Linaria, libraries like even the StyleX by the Facebook team, and even like libraries like I think Vanilla Extract as well is a good example of that, where we've seen like it is still, you can make CSS and JS happen, but it didn't really feel like CSS and JS. It felt like you're trying to sort of like put some nuts and bolts together to make it actually work. So in my mind, I think the challenge was like, can we just make this thing feel like the classic CSS and JS and still make it work? And I think like just anyone experiencing that, that is possible without any runtime cross is like, I mean, of course, the huge excitement.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you from my experience with it, I think that the really cool part to me is sort of that side of it where it's like, okay, this does work with server components. But I don't know, I thought it was just really cool how not only did you recreate a lot of those experiences of CSS and JS, but the way in which it works is just so cool to me because like in the past, like CSS and JS and a lot of actually JavaScript libraries in general were all about like compiling things and transforming them a lot to try to make them work in the browser. And what I've seen with in Panda is you're like, okay, we can take like design tokens and those will actually connect to CSS variables. And so you're like essentially leveraging newer technologies in the browser to just make this really, in my mind, simple system that's super powerful. And so at least if you want one data point, I'll say that gave me some delight.
Yeah, for sure. That is amazing. I mean, I'll say that like Panda is different things to different people, if you ask me. But I'd say that like the biggest challenge was, of course, getting all of that working in server components context, because that pretty much is a mark for me, because like that was the hardest problem to solve. And like maybe that's why I think that that's the biggest one that makes me excited most of the time. But of course, I mean, going into the features of like, I mean, having design token support in there, having TypeScript autocomplete, having CSS variables, using modern features like the cascade layers, all of those things were pretty useful, of course, to actually like make Panda what it is today.
I'm very excited for it. It's like, you know, I think there's still things that, and maybe you can speak to this too in terms of challenges, but like, I have noticed, and I think this is documented, like there are aspects where, say, I'm using style props or something. It's kind of like in some cases you have to give the static analysis system hints about like, hey, this is something that actually is used for the styling. And so you need to like analyze this and figure it out. And I do not enjoy that part as much, but I also understand why it's like that. I don't know if there's any other challenges you want to speak to about it or that in general. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, I mean, as with any static system, it has to come with rules. I think like, I mean, every engineer should know the tool they're working with. And of course, if you come from Chakra land, I mean, in Chakra universe, you could do anything you want because it's all runtime CSS and JS, right? So here, it's a start. I mean, it's not like, it's pretty much everything is static, right? So everything should be statically analyzable. In some cases, the compiler may not be able to figure out what you're trying to do. So you might want to, of course, like hint it. But I mean, one of the things I always recommend is like, try to just like use functions first before going for like style props. Style props should be like, I mean, I just want it to look nicer. I just want to make it like more like pleasing to the eye and stuff like that. But of course, we've got like lots of like agnostic functions you can use to auto styles, right? You can auto styles, you can auto recipes, you can use patterns like stack and vstack and hstack. All those things as just pure functions. So you could put, and you can create a div, pass in a class name and put all the styles in there with any of these functions and you should be good to go. I think that, I mean, so far, even though I'm the creator of Chakra.ui, I pretty much enjoy that experience of just like not having to use style props all the time. Because I think with Chakra.ui, there's no other option. You have to use style props everywhere, I mean, pretty much.
Yeah.
But here, you actually get the benefit of choosing whether you want to use style props or not. And I'm also starting to enjoy the benefit of like, okay, I don't want style props this time. I just want to write the CSS as a function. I'm putting the style object. And that is also a potential world, I guess, and I'm trying to open up to everyone at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I love style props. So to me, that's definitely the way I go. But the reason why I tell people it makes sense is more in the context of React, because when I look at React and what React is good at, it's good at components, and style props fit well with that. You can make a button component and extend that into your primary button component. You know, you can do things like that. And, you know, there's the variant approach. I've always found style props fit well within that paradigm. But I guess in this case, you're also like looking at this applying to everything, not even just React. And so I think that is another reason why it makes sense to provide other ways of doing things. But that makes me wonder, and I wanted to talk about this sort of side of things, the future side. So I have talked in this podcast about previously about how I've looked into making a component library using HTML web components instead. Okay. And I'm really curious on your thoughts on, you've sort of taken what I would call as like a sort of inside out, bottom up approach to expanding Chakra to other systems, right? Like you sort of took this machinery and you're making it so you can run the machinery in Vue and Svelte and everything. Why not just create HTML web components and they can be implemented in anything internally and be imported into anything theoretically, right?
Theoretically.
So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one.
I mean, to be honest, I think like you pretty much, I mean, your question already serves as a baseline for the answer, which is like all these things about web components seems to work theoretically. I think that's just one example. But when it gets very practical, I think one of the key premises of web components, you have to define the web components. And to define the web components, you have to call like custom elements.define. That's JavaScript right there. And of course, you still need JavaScript to be able to sort of like run and execute a web component. Well, I think there are new frameworks coming up these days like Enhance that actually help you like execute web components. And they are still pretty new. So I would say that, like, I mean, web components are sort of like, it's still, that age of web components is still new and fresh. It hasn't been explored as well as, like, classic frameworks like React and Vue and Solid. So I think that is really pretty much one of the key things there. And, of course, it's just like, I mean, wherever your target audience is, that's where you want to build for. I think this is just, like, the primary, like, rule number one of building things. Like, I mean, people don't really build stuff, like, right now, at least. Of course, there are teams that use that, but I would argue to say those teams are pretty rare and pretty small compared to the vast majority of people that build with, like, classic frameworks like React and Vue and Solid. And one of the key benefits of building to these frameworks is the fact that you get to leverage their features, right? Now we're talking about, like, server components and Next.js. I don't know when web components will get into that picture, at least. A lot of the time, these ideas are tailor-made to the framework's paradigm. It's not tailor-made to the web or web components in general. Right. Of course, I wish this was the case where, like, everyone converges to web components or at least uses some version of that, but that is not the case. So I wouldn't go too far as, like, try to engineer something in a framework where most people don't use, and I myself practically and honestly, I don't use as well. So I wouldn't go too far as, like, trying to solve for that problem. I personally tend to solve for my own problems, like things I use, places I use them, and try to build for those. So I mean, I'm sure there are much more technical reasons, but I think, like, I mean, for me, fundamentally, it comes down to where most people build stuff right now, and also, like, where I build stuff as well, because that's what I care about right now, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I wouldn't go in that direction right now.
I can tell you, you're definitely on the right track too, because I have. Like, using them with React Server components and stuff is much more difficult. if it's, like, basically not doable. But the reason I bring it up is more because I kind of want to understand from your perspective as somebody who is deeply involved in these kinds of things, where you see the future of UI components, of web components, of any of this. Like, do you see it as a future where we end up with, you know, a bunch more frameworks? Is it going to be keep being framework based? Are we going to get some sort of general purpose API? Is that something you've thought about? I'm just curious. Maybe you haven't, but
yeah, I'll say, like, I mean, I haven't thought too deeply about that. But one of the things I can say for sure is, the future of creating UI components in general starts with, like, having a headless solution, which is, like, having some sort of solution that is not, first of all, that doesn't have any styles on it. So it's pretty much just, or has very minimal styles on it, which allows people to actually apply their own custom styling from the get-go and not have to override or, like, tweak anything at all.
Awesome. Yes.
So that is like one cornerstone, I would say, of the future of UI components. And I think another benchmark that I'm starting to notice as well is pretty much, like, the idea of, like, composition templates. What I mean by that is, like, if I want to make a page shell, this is the code snippet for how to make a page shell using framework X and framework Y. Now,
yeah.
That idea serves as a pretty good foundation for the future, because it means that, like, this composition can happen in any number of frameworks. It is just a primitive template that you can use, and you can just copy paste them into your destination framework, and you're actually pretty good to go. Now, if you take these two ideas together, you can actually, like, go very far. But I think there's one more third component, which is just, like, a styling framework, of course. Like, you need to style these things. You have the headless solution, you have the styling library, and of course you've got, like, some sort of, like, composition templates where you could actually, like, compose, I mean, see examples of compositions, right? If I want to build my app today and I just see, like, a pretty good, like, I mean, page that shows me, like, different variations of navbars, of page shells using the framework of my choice.
Yeah.
I think that actually takes people from ground zero to ground 90%, like, pretty much, like, instantly. You just copy, paste, done, and you're pretty good to go. So, I mean, these are the key building blocks, I mean, I'd say, like, of the future of building UI components and working with UI components, because one of the key things I found is when it comes to building even headless components, there is a certain number of compositions and API you can expose, but imagine if it's an open source UI component library. I don't think you can preempt the limitless number of compositions and use cases that everyone is going to have.
Yeah,
that is a very, very complex problem to solve.
Yep.
I mean, realistically, these are the kind of problems that like component library authors have to deal with. I mean, someone says, hey, I want this option to be able to disable all of the dropdowns on my component library. And it's like, how do I make such APIs for you right now? Because it's not possible, right? But with the idea of like composition templates, I could show you how to build stuff in an application level, not like at a component level. It's more like, this is more like, if you want to build your real working application with these frameworks, these are examples of how to do that. And I think that if people have these tools to be able to build stuff, and we have to also keep into consideration that the web is seemingly getting more complex over time. There's so many terminologies and things that people have to figure out. So, I mean, it just means that even component library authors or UI library authors have to do a bit more in helping people adopt these new systems as it grows and gets even more complex.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sounds exciting to me. I'm curious about another aspect too. So I actually also kind of come from a desktop application background as well. I've done web development for over 20 years, but I've also done a lot of desktop programming. And I don't know, are you familiar with like Qt or GDK, or there's a lot of other like not really web focused, and we used to call them, I don't know if they still call them this, we called them widgeting toolkits. now it's, maybe they're called component libraries, I don't know. But one thing that I always liked about those systems is a lot of them had really good like graphic designers. So I could drag stuff on to the screen and like I could program it, you know, programmatically, and it would reflect on what I'm seeing on the designer. That's something that I know there's a project like that for Chakra, and it's kind of stuff that it kind of shows up for web components, but I've never really seen it done super well. But when you talk about like the future, and when you talk about making it easy for people to just like drop stuff in, right? Like these layouts or whatever they might be, is that something you consider to be a part of that future? Is that something you've looked into more?
I mean, I haven't spent so much time there. It's pretty much just like sort of like my own thesis of what that future would look like. And I think that like the more we embrace this type of like, I mean, widget system, like you call it, pretty much like not just like giving people the foundational building blocks, but actually putting together these building blocks for them in pre-made compositions or in pre-made variations. I mean, I think that as we keep going and progressing, this type of systems could potentially be thought and be formed into some sort of model for an AI tool to actually be able to pre-generate even more options. But I think that like we are slowly leaving the phase of like people that build small tiny components to the phase of like being more helpful by providing even much more massive compositions that would be useful for most people. You know, just like the way you go to Google to search, and then you just keep hitting the right key, the right arrow key to see different images, or just scrolling down to shop for different options. That is pretty much how I imagine like the future of like UI components would be. I want to have a button. I can pretty much just like scroll through all different versions of button I want and be like, yep, that's the button I need. Let's switch over to the drop down. Yep, that's the drop down I need. And I can say, okay, please give me all of this in Chakra UI and let me just get going. Now, that is a future that would help people be more productive and actually ship products faster.
I will say at this point, I feel like implemented logic for a combo box or whatever in, let's say I did it in, you know, I think originally it was like HTML and CSS, and we called it DHTML at the time. Like you add like a little bit of inline JavaScript, right? To like sort of make it like have some animation with an image, right? And then I was doing it in jQuery, and then I was redoing it in something else, and then, you know, and and Bootstrap, and then it was this. And I'm like, at this point, I'm like, I don't want to write any of that anymore again. Like, why is this not something that's just done at this point, you know? Yeah. And so hearing you talk about like, all right, let's just like move forward and create these systems where I could just drop it in and it works. Oh man, I would be the happiest camper in the web world, I think. Yeah, sure. I'm curious though, like when you're looking at that, I don't know, is this, I know that it just probably takes a lot of your time, you know, managing all this in general, but I also imagine you are thinking about these types of things as well. Is this like when we talk about, say, Panda and the way you're working on the design of that, is that something that plays into it where you're thinking like, okay, I see this future where I want to be able to support this. How do I, you know, bring that into what I'm creating now?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think like Panda currently is like, Panda plays a small role in that future, but I think like that, I mean, for Panda, it's pretty much a matter of like, styling and everything that has to do with styling. I mean, one of the key building blocks of styling is design tokens. And how do I sort of like orchestrate these design tokens with all the different design tools that I've got today, or that is even possible today? Like, how do I make a change in Figma and have it reflect automatically in my application? Like, I don't want to have to write some sort of Node.js script that would fetch Figma and do all of that work. Or how do I have a central place where I can like keep all my tokens and orchestrate them across multiple GitHub projects and sort of like push and pull from them at any point in time? Now, that's a small bit of the future that we're heading to, where you don't even have to think about like your design tokens anymore, and just have them like fully managed, whether from Figma or from some sort of cloud solution. Now, Panda is sort of like built primarily to be able to plug into that sort of future, even though we're not there yet, but it's been built with that in mind. And even all of the existing tools that we've worked on, like Zack.js and Arc, they're all around, centered around, if I say I want a drop-down menu or a combo box, and I say I want it in React and Vue, I don't want to see any difference in the code. Like, it's pretty much the same thing. Like, just give me that code and let me just get the hell out of here. That's like, the key question or the feeling that I also have, because I've done this many times as well over the small lifetime of my career. It's like too many components built over and over again. I can imagine for someone like you, it's even way more. So it's like, how do we just solve this once and for all in a way that is like pretty much central, in a way that is not tied to any specific framework? So you can decide to say, okay, let me have a combo box in Panda, CSS, and ArcUI, or Zack.js, and like,
yeah,
boom, that's your combo box. Just copy paste it. It comes styled. You can take everything and tweak it as you want. And it's like, you'll probably be a happy shopper if you see that.
Yeah, definitely. That makes a lot of sense. I do think though that, and I don't know, you're probably more of an expert on this than me, but you mentioned how you felt like Panda played a small role in this, and in a sense I think that's probably true, but in a broader sense, the sort of interface between how something looks and how it behaves, I think, plays a really large role. And the reason I say that is because so many times I've had to sort of re-implement or augment the way a default component looks, whether that's in Chakra or some other component library. You know, the designer comes to me and says, no, I want it to do this and look this way. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Can we please just like let it? It already does it this way. Why? This is going to take me like a week to do this one tweak to make it animate in a slightly different way. You know what I mean? And so part of me has always been like, oh, let's just not do that. But at the same time, I think a lot of times people that are asking for things like that are asking for it for a reason, because they're like, no, this, I think this will make the user experience better. And so when I see, And this is why I like Chakra better than a lot of other component libraries, is because it was always easier for me to make those tweaks, and, you know, where I'm not like in other systems, I've had to be like, all right, I guess I'm like rewriting this entire thing from scratch. Whereas if you're able to create an interface where you can be like, hey, let me just grab the logic and throw a different skin on it or tweak the logic without affecting that skin, that sounds incredibly valuable, right?
Totally. I think you actually put it pretty nicely. There's this one part which is just how it looks, and then there's the other part which is how it works. Now, having those two things separate and being able to tweak them as needed is actually very powerful. And I think that there's pretty much like one hidden piece, which is what we talked about in the future, is pretty much a central place where these two things meet. Right, and I don't have to write code to be able to get this. I mean, for example, if your designer comes to you and says, I want to tweak out the hover state of the buttons, and then you'd be like, oh my God, I've got to like tweak a lot of things. I mean, even in Chakra today. But imagine if you guys had a central cloud solution where you could just go there and just like, oh, this is actually the button here. Now let's just tweak the hover state together. And then you click a drop down and then you change the hover state. And then it automatically opens a PR to your project to just like update that automatically. Now, my thesis there is sort of like, there are some UI things that developers shouldn't have to do today. It's like, it's just less dead work in my mind, at least. Right? There's just work that should pretty much be taken away. I mean, or even handed to someone else, maybe the designer or the product manager, wherever, to actually be able to manage the look and feel of these components and put the developer in charge of the logic. That is what they're good at. And just like have these styling beats and styling conversations just like in a separate place, I guess.
yeah, that absolutely. So is this like future someplace where the user experience designer and the graphic designer, they can use Figma or whatever, and I don't know, hit some sort of button to send it to me and it sends me the design tokens and I can see the behavior and it's just like, yeah, let me grab that off the shelf, plug in a few things and we're good to go.
We're good to go. That's it.
Yeah. All right. Sign me up. How do I make this happen? I mean, really, I'm serious. How do we make this happen? If we look at, you know, your projects at least, you know, if somebody wants to get involved or wants to help further these goals and seize this vision, you know, do you have any recommendations on the best way for people to do that?
I mean, I feel like it definitely takes a while to build empathy for this type of future, I would say. And the best way to actually build like intuition and empathy for this type of future that we're heading to is pretty much like, I mean, just get involved in the, should I say, like right now when the process is still pretty manual, like we're building components and trying to actually like design machines, write a styling framework, like those, just getting involved in this ecosystem of tools actually like helps you like build enough knowledge, helps you build enough empathy for like what that future could look like. Because one of the crucial pieces, if you do not see the future where you're heading to, like, I mean, there's not much work you can do that's valuable, right? So it's like, to do valuable work, it probably starts with a vision of like, you need to see where you're heading to first. The only way to do that is just get involved right now in any of the projects, like, I mean, Chakra UI, Zach.js, Panda, like any of them, get into the ecosystem and be helpful there. I think like once you do that over time, you'll probably be in a much better spot to contribute to this future at any point.
Absolutely. Sounds good. So if somebody was like actually wanting to, is the best place to do that to check out the GitHub, I assume, for these different projects?
Yes. Check out the GitHub, check out the Discord channel. If both of them are too overwhelming, of course, I'd recommend checking out the GitHub and stick to GitHub for the most part. But actually, try to be helpful there. I think that is very valuable.
Awesome. Winding down here, I was just wondering, do you have any like funny stories from like the early days of Chakra or any of your other projects where you're like, oh yeah, there was that time where I accidentally released this or I don't know, something that, you know, comes to mind?
No, I think like maybe the only one is sort of like we actually talked about this old state machine idea like many times, I think for over a year. And it's like, I think one of the mistakes we made is that we went to the community and we'd be like, we're going to launch a new UI library framework that is going to be built with state machines. And we hadn't even figured out how it's going to work. We just said it out in the open and like people already expected it the next month or two. And I'm just like, oh boy, we already promised the community and now we're not able to ship. And it just felt so funny as like every time anyone asks about it, I'm just laughing because like, it's not even ready yet. It's not even like, there's no single comment about this idea just yet. We just like set it and we figure it out as we go. So it's like, I think from that moment on, at some point, I'm just like, okay, guys, let's just get it together and just like, let's just make this thing happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe you had said this in another interview or something, but like, I don't know, the impression you gave me with that was you're sort of just like, I'm just gonna, I don't know, try to make this work with state machines. And you just sat down and sort of cranked it out. Is that right? And you're like, oh, hey, look, it works.
Yeah, actually. I mean, I had no prior experience like being in stuff like that. And I think what makes it even harder is the fact that there was no like example to look at. Like there's no like a library to say this was made with state machines. Let's try to learn from that. So it's just like,
yeah.
You just jumping in the middle of the forest and trying to find your way from there. So it was a pretty rough process, but I think it worked out pretty well.
Like I said when we were sort of chatting before the show, I'm super excited about the Zag project in general, just because it seems like it takes this problem that I've said we've done over and over again, solving the same problem, but you're now solving it in a very structured way that should make it much easier to test and apply to other projects in the future, which is super exciting. I just want to say thank you so much for joining us on the show. And as someone that I've actually created and maintained a number of open source projects over the years, and nowhere near as popular as yours. But at the same time, like I get some taste of how much work it is, you know, like I remember one case was like, oh, a new version of whatever comes out that my stuff is built on, and then people, you know, they're filing tickets, hey, this doesn't work anymore, and you're like, oh, I got, you know what that's like, right?
Totally.
And I'm just saying, like, it's so much work, and like managing all that, and you're like, oh, now what do I got? Did he dig into it? And you're like, oh wow, that like fundamentally changes this underlying thing. I gotta like figure, you know.
Yeah.
So I just want to say, you know, thank you so much for all the work that you've done on Chakra and Panda and Zag and making these public and available to everyone else. I think I can speak for a lot of people and just saying thank you for that. And really appreciate it and look forward to see what else you have in your back pocket.
Yeah, for sure. You're going to see them all one at a time, for sure. But yeah, thank you so much. I mean, I'm really excited. Thank you for the kind remarks. And I mean, of course, I would say that like at the end of the day, like just trying to sort of like make the ecosystem much better than it is, and quote unquote leaving my own mark on the ecosystem is pretty much why I keep doing these things every time. I'm sort of like trying to make things better. And I'm really excited about the direction and the way it's all shaping out. It started off with a very simple goal to make like just make this thing open source and see what happens. But now it's become like very serious business at the same time. But regardless, all of that journey has sort of like led me to sort of like where we are right now, and I can only be grateful for that. So as much as like I've helped the community, I would say the community has also helped us and shaped us and shaped me specifically to sort of like to who I am today in terms of like engineering, in terms of building stuff. It's like, I mean, I think like all of the things I've learned working on open source cannot be compared to working at a job for 5 years or 10, because like open source compresses all that and gives you like the full pound like all at once. And if you can survive that, of course, you get to learn a lot. So of course, I'm grateful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we all appreciate it. And we all appreciate you taking your time to join us on the show. And I hope you have a great, I guess it's getting to be evening your time. But yeah, I hope you have a great rest of your day as well. And just thank you so much once again. If anyone wants to check out your projects, I will include links and everything. So that should be easy. But yeah, thank you so much once again.
Yeah, thanks, Thomas. I'm really excited. Thanks for this chat.